This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
On Hope 103.2, joining us, author and I would say now filmmaker, Jason F. Wright. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me today.
I'm really excited that Christmas Jars has got to have an Australian release. I know that it came out last year in the States, but watching it this year particularly, it's bringing such a great story to cinemas. But it's based on a book that you wrote 15 years ago. Did you always want to see it made into a movie?
I did. I think any author who's being honest would say that, you know, they... even during the writing process, you know, of any novel, you sort of see some of the scenes in your mind's eye and imagine what it might be like to play out. Of course, I've seen, you know, a thousand movies that were adapted from books. But you just never really allow yourself to think that it might happen. I mean, maybe if you're J.K. Rowling or someone at the very, very top of the industry, and it's a given that your things will eventually turn into films. But for most authors like me, we just, you know, we kind of hope and pray and think maybe there's a long shot. So when it really happens, it's a pretty surreal thing.
And 15 years, I mean, that's a long time between writing it and seeing it actually end up on the big screen. So how does it feel for you? Because in so many ways, like that's delayed gratification right there.
Oh, that's a really good way to put it. Yeah, it's been a very long journey. We began developing the film with a team in February of 2006. And then by 2007 or 2008, we thought for sure this thing will be in theaters around the world. And, you know, the economy crashed here in the States and one thing led to another. And, you know, one guy got fired and one guy threw a fit and one guy lost all his money. And the next thing you know, it's been 15 years, and it finally just took the right, you know, they say the planets had to align, and that's sort of what happened. We just got the right team in place, and really it needed people that believed that this was about more than a book or a movie. It was about a movement, a kindness movement. And once everyone sort of understood that this was about changing lives and not just making a few bucks, that's really when we saw the tide turn, and here we are.
And I think it's almost been really fortuitous that it's come out when it has, because if the message of kindness was needed at any time, I think 2020 is certainly a season around the world where people appreciate the message of kindness and can see just what good it will do. But the concept brought about in Christmas Jars, where people collect their spare change across a year, collect it in a jar and then give it to somebody in need across the Christmas season. When you first thought of that idea and wrote the concept for Christmas Jars, what was going on in your own life that prompted the story?
We were having a just kind of a down holiday season in 2004, and we had two little girls and a brand new baby boy, and I was working in politics in Washington, D.C., which can bring anybody down. And I was looking for something to just bring a little bit of hope and light to our holiday season. So my wife and I just came up with this idea of putting a jar on the counter and filling it with our spare change. That was about mid-October of 2004. And to make a very long story short, the next 8 weeks changed our lives forever as we slowly dropped our change in this jar and began to think about the needs of other people. And the Christmas jar just forces you at least for a few seconds every day to just pause and to quit looking at yourself and to look out, you know, kind of at the world. Even if you don't know who the jar or the gift is going to go to yet, you're already sort of building it up with this little daily sacrifice, little daily accumulation of kindness. And so on Christmas Eve, we gave the jar away anonymously to someone in our church group, actually. You left it on their doorstep, knocked and ran and hid in the bushes. And we just had an experience I'll never forget. And I knew that our family would never be the same. We woke up the very next morning, Christmas morning, 2004, and we put another jar on the counter and said, now we're going to do it for a full year, every single day, putting a little bit of extra money in this jar and see what happens. And it really changed the way we perceived other people around us. And it really helped my children too, to learn a little bit more about the meaning of giving. And then the books kind of just came from that. The book is fiction. So it's not based on our experience. It's just inspired by the notion of a jar.
Yeah. I mean, it's got an idea that people can adapt and take into their own circumstances, but why do you think it was that act of giving and that act of focusing outward at other people? Why did that help you get out of your own kind of slump and that kind of funk you were feeling around Christmas, do you think?
I don't know. I think that we just are so consumed. I think anyway, any time of year, we tend to be pretty consumed with our own lives. We tend to think that our problems are the worst in the neighborhood and what we're going through is harder than anyone else. And I just think it's human nature that we tend to be relatively, selfish and self-centered. At least I do. I always think about myself first. And this tradition was, I know, we might as well be honest with the good people of Australia, right? But
it's
this
true,
really inspired me to just stop and reflect a little bit and to realize that, our family was going through some hard things back then, but my goodness, the gentleman three blocks away in our neighborhood, his wife died of cancer in just a matter of months before Christmas. And on the other side of the neighborhood, someone that my daughter went to school with, their home burned down.
Wow.
A few days after Thanksgiving here in the States, down to nothing. And things are happening all around us and people are suffering in the world. And chances are that if you're listening right now, no matter what you're going through, the odds are that there's someone in your circle of influence at work or church or school or whatever, who's actually going through something even harder and they need some love. And that's what a Christmas jar represents. It's not just the money. It's the message of the jar and being seen. That you're not alone in the world.
And there's something really empowering, I think, no matter what circumstance people find themselves in or what financial status they may have, the moment you feel like you can give and that you've got something to give to somebody else, that's a really empowering realization.
I agree. And it doesn't have to be big. And I think maybe sometimes, particularly during the holidays, and particularly here in the States, we tend to think that we have to write a big check to our favorite charity or do something massive on some grand scale. But you can change a life in such a small and a simple way. And if you're listening now and you're feeling a little bit down, go do something for someone. Go open a door for someone or loan a dollar to the neighbor or give a hug, a socially distanced hug to someone who's feeling like they've had a hard day. But you're right. It's just these little acts of service you do for people that, yes, they bless their lives, but more than anything, it blesses you. And I just think that we grow as individuals when we think beyond ourselves.
And you mentioned that your children have been part of doing this with you right from the beginning as well. How's it impacted your own family and even your kids growing up with this mentality of generosity and seeing the example that you and your wife have set?
Yeah, I think it's been so good for them because I remind them all the time that I don't want them to be like I was. I don't want them to grow up with the same kind of, selfish mentality that I had, particularly as a teenager, when I, no matter who I was with, what room I was in, I was always the most important person there. And I've wanted my children to sort of, exceed what I've been able to learn and to learn the lessons sooner. And it's really cool to think that my two boys, one was a baby then, now he's 17, and the other one wasn't even born yet. He was born 3 years after the book came out. And so this has been a part of his life. Neither one of those two boys remembers a time in their life when there wasn't a jar on the counter. And every single Christmas Eve for 15, actually now this will be our 16th year because the book came out the next year. So every Christmas Eve for 16 years, we have given away at least one jar to someone in need in our community. And my children have been along for every single one of those. And I think finally, it's just important that my kids and all kids can learn, and maybe adults too, that Christmas doesn't need to be thought of as this 24-hour holiday that we count down to, and then we enjoy, and then we sort of throw the trash away and we wait another year. You can kind of celebrate what this holiday is about a little bit all year long by just taking a moment to pause and put a little kindness in that jar on your counter.
It's such a true reflection. And it's interesting that you say, you know, you had that transitional moment where you went from feeling like, you know, you were the most important person in the room. And I think definitely you're not the only person who has gone through even a phase like that, or maybe even right now find themselves in that sort of situation. Was it just switching toward generosity that brought you out of that? Or was there anything else at play that made you more aware of others around you and thinking of their circumstances?
I think it was the research process every year of who would get our jar really opened my eyes to what people were going through. And I found that perfect little family across the street that seemed to have everything together and had no worries in the world, and they had enough money and everything, you know, just like right out of the movies, perfect, ideal American family. What I learned year after year after year is that they're going through some really hard things privately. And just because they're their problems on their sleeves doesn't mean that they're not struggling with depression and job loss. And are they going to be able to keep their home or caring for a loved one, an elderly loved one in the home? The other thing that's been so helpful, and I would invite people to visit ChristmasJars.com, where you can read stories of thousands of people around the world who have now been a part of this movement by receiving a jar themselves. And it kind of goes like this. There's a knock at the door, and the jars will begin, at least here in America. You'll start to see jars delivered this weekend up through Christmas. And they'll open the door. They'll see this jar. Sometimes there's a book. Sometimes there's a note with it. They're curious. They're overwhelmed. They're emotional. They go online. They search, what is a Christmas jar? It pulls up the website. They read some of the other stories, and then there's a link to share their story. And the stories are so similar. And they go something like this. I was alone. I'm a single mom. I have three children. I'm not sure how I'm going to have any money to do anything this holiday season. I was praying for a miracle when I got a knock at the door. And I went to the door, and there was $100 or $200 or $300, just enough to help me give my kids some Christmas magic. That's not a one-time story. That is thousands and thousands of times we've heard things like that.
It is just incredible that it has been going on in that way for about 16 years. When you first wrote the book, did you conceive that it would be something as enduring as it has been?
No, I really didn't. I mean, I hoped that maybe one family might try it like we did and then two the next year, and it might grow a little bit sort of word of mouth year to year. And who knows, maybe, you know, over the course of 10 or 20 years or the rest of my lifetime, there'd be some small little army of people out there doing this. But I couldn't get a publisher to publish the book initially. I had a very hard time. Everyone seemed to think that this was, you know, too cliche and wouldn't catch on. And I was ready to sort of call it quits and go back to my day job. And my sweet wife kept saying, you know, keep trying. The world will eventually embrace this idea. And again, not just the book, but just the tradition behind it. And eventually a publisher said, yeah, we believe that this could eventually change the world in a really meaningful way. And so the next year the book came out, and I didn't believe, like, it still very much felt like a right family thing. But let me tell you, boy, that first year as books started to sell around the country, and then in subsequent years around the world, that I started hearing from real people that were not just receiving jars, but were learning the meaning of the holiday by giving jars away. It was pretty overwhelming to see it grow into something that, as I said before, this is about much more than a book and a movie now. It's about a movement around the world. And it's incredibly humbling to be a small part of that.
Well, and I think there'll be lots of Australian families who are hearing about this book, hearing about the Christmas Jars movement for the very first time. And then you think that maybe they'll do it this year for the first time, and then it will become an annual tradition for them as well. And it just becomes this multi-generational thing that really is going to have such a huge impact on lives, as you say, right around the world. But you've mentioned you worked in politics. You had another career before you switched into becoming an author, which you've now been able to do in a very prolific way with so many different titles. That switch from politics to writing, though, does seem like, you know, quite a jump and quite a great change to make. What was the mindset around that?
Oh, that's a simple question. I wanted to do this in the third grade. I told my third grade teacher in Chicago, Illinois, I did. She was beautiful. Her name was Miss Sampson, and she was tall and lovely, and she believed in all of her students that we could be what we wanted to become if we were willing to try and to fail and then to try again. And I have my very first little manuscript that I wrote in the third grade, called Molly and Polly, and it was about two bunny rabbits that rode motorcycles and wore leather jackets, and they solved crime all around Virginia.
I want to read that.
And she, well, it gets better. I sent it to a publisher, and I got a card back in the mail. I mean, I was 11 years old. I got a card back in the mail, and it said, "Your manuscript has been forwarded to the publication committee for consideration." Wow. And because I was a kid and I had no idea what that meant, I thought, hey, I'm gonna get a book published. Of course, I never heard back, which makes me wonder if it's still under consideration and maybe one of these days it's gonna come out. But that was the beginning of, I mean, I was every year as a child up through high school when I published a book of poetry my senior year of high school, I was sending stuff out there and just thinking, this is what I want to do. And then, you know, college and marriage and children have a way of reprioritizing your life. So I sort of got a real job and got involved in small business and politics and other things. But in the back of my head, all of these years, I could hear my third grade teacher and others who came after her saying, you could really do this if you work hard enough. So, it was a weird transition from politics, and my neighbors thought I'd lost my mind when I quit my job and started writing in my bathrobe. But I've been very, very fortunate, and I know that I'm not writing great literature that's going to win any, you know, the Pulitzer for the novel of the year or anything, But I hope that I'm writing books that make people want to be a little bit better, because that's what my books have done for me, is helped me want to be a better person. And I think that's what matters.
It does. I mean, and they're stories that inspire. And I think with Christmas Jars particularly, you've told an amazing story. And I notice in a few others of your books, Christmas is a continuous theme that kind of pops up. Why do you like writing around the idea of Christmas and that particular holiday?
I think it has a lot to do with just sort of my own emotional roller coaster during the holidays. My father died when I was 16, just a few days before Christmas. Wow. And, you know, it was a weird time and it was unexpected. So you're having viewings and funerals and services and people visiting and all those things that are happening around a funeral that are taking the place of Christmas parties and caroling and Christmas dinner and all the things that we should have been doing didn't happen that year. And so every year I would just, I don't know, sort of find myself, you know, missing my dad and thinking, this isn't what I thought my holidays were going to be like for the rest of my life. And so I've written books to bring myself a little cheer during the holidays and hoping that they do the same for other people. And I guess personally, kind of selfish because I like to dive into a good Christmas book. So I thought, well, maybe I'll write one or two of my own.
Well, and they're totally something that helps people feel that sense of joy. Like you say, sometimes, I mean, the majority of families, I would say, have something that makes Christmas difficult. We are all used to seeing the picture perfect household, but everybody, I think, has a challenge to some degree that makes Christmas hard. In those kind of times where we are looking for joy, what kind of prompts it for you? I mean, you've mentioned that Christmas stories help, but is there something that you gravitate towards that helps you feel better or gives you a sense of hope when you reflect on some of those more challenging times?
I think any time that we can find a reason to look back into our childhood, into our family memories. I think that's a good thing. And maybe there's someone listening today who doesn't have, you know, a holiday memory that they can cling to. But I hope not. I hope that everyone has at least that one Christmas, that one year, that one special day or special gift or special memory that brings a little color. I mean, I just think it's so important to connect back to families in that way. And I, you know, as I said before, the reason the Christmas jar tradition, I think, has appealed to so many people around the world and why it's grown to mean so much to me is, to give you a picture, I'm sitting at my desk here in Virginia, and I'm looking across my office at my personal jar, my office jar that sits on my bookshelf. And, you know, we're a few weeks away from Christmas, so the jar is getting pretty full and I'm going to give it away. But that jar was also there 6 months ago when it was 100 degrees outside and COVID was beginning to ravage our community here. And when I need a little hope and a little light and a little joy, I could just look to my left up a few feet where I'm right now, and I can see that jar. And I can know exactly what it means and know that in a few months it's going to change someone's life.
Yeah, it's a remarkable perspective switch, or something that triggers a positive perspective, I suppose. And this year has been a tough one. As you mentioned, communities right around the world have been affected by COVID to varying degrees. This Christmas is going to look different for so many people. How do you think the Christmas jars concept is going to be received in the midst of 2020 and all that we have seen globally?
Oh, you asked some good. These are some of the best and most original questions I've been asked in 15 years. I'm telling you that right now.
Oh, thank you. Really, I appreciate it.
I mean, really, I've done hundreds of these interviews, and you are really, really good at getting to the point. And I think there are two things. As I look at my jar on the counter, I think it's not as full as some years because at least here in America, we have this coin shortage. And people aren't shopping as much or they're shopping online. And B, they're not using coins as much, at least, again, not here on the stage. So I'm hopeful that because of COVID, people are willing to get a little bit more creative and maybe find other ways to fill their jar rather than the tradition has just been loose change every day that would go in the jar. You know, you'd go to the grocery store and you'd come home with a few quarters and you would drop them in the jar. So I'm hopeful people will be creative to do that. And I think people need to realize that your neighbors are struggling, whether you know it or not. They're going, I mean, just read the news. And it's not just financial. It's some of my favorite memories have been giving a jar to someone who didn't need the money as much as they needed the reminder that they're not alone in the world. And so easy with COVID keeping us so isolated. I mean, I have some dear friends from my church that have been, I mean, and you probably know people like this too, who literally haven't been outdoors in 8 months and they feel so alone and they feel like the world has just moved on without them. And in a Christmas jar, yes, there's a little money that can help to pay a bill or to buy a meal or, you know, one little nice treat for them, but it's not just the money. It's a really powerful message that the world is not as dark as they think it is, and that they are seen, that someone knew that they mattered. Isn't that an important message to everyone in the world? No matter your faith, your religion, your race, your gender, your orientation, or what country you're in, all of us deserve to feel like we matter, because we do.
Yeah, and maybe this year it won't just be coins, as you say, but maybe a note of encouragement and something like that that really does say, hey, I see you and I'm thinking about you. I think it's going to be so powerful. And this year for you, how are you going to be celebrating it? Because I heard a rumor, I think one of your traditions is to just coat the kitchen bench with lollies and let the kids have a free-for-all. Do you still do that, or what's this Christmas going to look like?
Where in the world that is true, and where did you get that? Because that is, you have done some homework. Yeah, we, that is the, that, I'm so impressed. That is the one thing we do every year is we let the kids come downstairs. We come downstairs first. We kind of set the stage. I make sure, I've been telling the kids when they were really little, I had to make sure that nobody had broken in and stolen any of their gifts. And they would come downstairs, and now and there's just candy for miles, or lollies, as you say. And they can eat whatever they want. They don't have to ask permission. And by, you know, by dinner time, everyone has a stomach ache and is ready for bed. So it works out perfectly. This year, mostly, I'm just excited to have my family, my immediate family, safely under the same roof. Mm. We're not traveling. We're not going to take any chances. We're going to stay home and enjoy a little peace on earth.
That sounds like a beautiful Christmas, even if there maybe is a sugar coma headache involved in the midst, Jason. But thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
You're so welcome. Thank you. Merry Christmas. And I'm coming. When COVID clears our air and our systems, I'm getting on a plane and I'm going to finally make my way to what looks like the one of the most beautiful countries in the world. And I want to visit some bookstores and movie theaters and parks and the outback. And I cannot wait. I will be there.
Oh, you are absolutely welcome. Make sure you come say hey to us when you arrive.
I sure will. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.